These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Hello and welcome to the Georgia Today podcast. Here we bring you the latest reports from the GPB newsroom. On today's episode, as close to $7 billion in federal funding for education remains frozen, Georgia schools could be among the worst to feel the effects. A postal distribution center in Palmetto, south of Atlanta, continues to struggle a year after frustrating mail delays across the nation. And have you ever thought about using your backyard to grow food?
Corn, tomatoes, okra, cucumbers, certain summer squashes that you can grow, broccoli, cabbage, all of our greens such as kales and mustard greens.
Today is Monday, July 14th. I'm Orlando Montoya, and this is Georgia Today. Democrats in the state Senate are calling on the Trump administration to release federal funds designated for after-school programs, GPB's Sarah Callis reports.
Schools in Georgia have still not received millions of dollars in federal grants they were promised for the upcoming school year. Students will return to the classrooms in August, and funds have been placed under review by the federal government. State Senator Rashawn Kemp, who works for an education nonprofit, says the frozen funds need to be released before the school year starts, or Governor Brian Kemp needs to call a special session to address the shortfall if the programs are cut altogether.
This is not a partisan issue. This is a people issue. Georgia families can't wait. Georgia kids shouldn't be used as political pawns. And the future of 27,000 children is on the line.
A spokesperson for the governor said there are no plans for a special session at this time. For GPB News, I'm Sarah Callis at the state capitol.
A district-by-district accounting of the federal funds the U.S. Department of Education is holding back shows a disproportionate impact on schools in Atlanta-area congressional districts. The analysis released last week by the left-leaning think tank New America shows among Georgia districts, those represented by Democrats David Scott, Nikema Williams, and Lucy McBath are set to lose the most, more than $10 million each. But even Republican-represented Georgia districts stand to lose millions. Close to $7 billion in federal money required by law to go to states for education remains frozen. GPB's Grant Blankenship recently talked to Bibb County School Superintendent Dan Sims to find out what the frozen money was meant to pay for.
First of all, thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely.
So what we're trying to suss out is this between $6 and $7 billion that the federal government has hanging fire.
Yeah.
What we know, what we think, what we suspect that may do to our schools locally. So I guess probably a lot of bullet points, maybe yeah. Take them one by one. So where do we start? What do we know?
So for us, if you want to go in that space,
yeah,
migrant education, and those students who fit the definition of migrant education, we're talking about tutors, travel, instructional materials, summer experiences. Another big category under Title IIA is improving teacher quality, and that's all things related to professional development.
How would that affect say training to get up to speed on this whole science of reading thing, like all the literacy efforts? Are those the sorts of training that might fall under this umbrella?
They could fall under that umbrella. Granted, it's not the only bucket that we have for professional development, but it is a significantly utilized bucket. And that could include consultants that we bring in for specialized PD, coaches that we have in the district to support all things related to improving teacher quality. From time to time, we do service agreements with individuals to do work above and beyond what's in place to support everything that we're doing. Substitute teachers, travel for professional development, all those things that are designed to increase the learning for our teachers.
Well, substitute teachers, that's in recent history, that's been a pretty big budget line, right?
Yeah. And specifically for this, though, this would account for substitutes that are needed when teachers are away for professional development.
I see.
So it's just a matter of being able to pay for that.
So a subset of substitute teachers.
Absolutely.
Just when teachers are off getting these extra certifications and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Give me a sense of how much you have spent historically on that kind of thing, this professional development thing, of this federal money. Like, how much money is that?
So we're talking at least $1 million.
Which is not an insignificant sum for
No, it's not
like
an insignificant sum. Not at all.
Yeah.
And that's for a year. Yeah, and you're talking about year over year money that we rely on in that space.
Yeah, let's keep going through the other buckets that are
All right, so English language learners, and specifically language instruction. And
so this is separate from the migrant students pile. This is, okay.
Yes, it is. And this is for web-based subscriptions that can help our students, tutors, books for those particular students, fees for parent literacy instructors. So here we this is a big one. All of them are big, but this one starts getting into dual enrollment opportunities for our students. We actually have a full-time dual enrollment coordinator, somebody whose sole role is to ensure that we connect our students to dual enrollment opportunities.
Yeah,
we pay for that with federal funds.
So yeah, talk to me a little bit more about. I know dual enrollment has been a big deal in the high schools for a few years
Absolutely
now.
Absolutely, so.
Why is dual enrollment such a big deal for kids here?
It's a big deal because imagine, if you will, you're a high school student and you can walk away with 30 credit hours and no bill, and you transfer those credits to wherever you go after you graduate. That's a big deal, especially for underserved communities and families who just cannot afford to send their kids to college. I was one of those kids, but didn't have a dual enrollment experience. So to give our students that experience and to save that kind of money and potentially have students with the ability to graduate from college with a bachelor's degree in 2 years versus 4 years, it is a true game changer.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, we have now a great partnership with the National Equity Project, where our students in Bibb County will be able to go to schools like Harvard, Howard, Penn State, Spelman, Morehouse, and the like online and get those dual enrollment credits. So they now have a national opportunity to get dual enrollment credits. And we're looking forward to paying for that using these federal funds.
So that's what's on the line here.
That is potentially what's on the line.
Yeah.
And I would hate to compromise such an amazing opportunity for our students because of this freeze.
Again, price tag on that.
That's going to be in the area of, I would say, about just under $2 million. Now, financially, our big one is our 21st century learning communities, and that is all of our before and after school programs.
Yeah.
And that comes at a price tag of I want to say about $3 million. So that is before and after school programming for our students and for their families, not just to be kept and babysat, but to engage in enrichment activities, to extend the learning from the school day, and of course a safe, structured place for students to be while parents are still at work.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing, is that it allows parents to work a 40-hour week.
Right, right. In addition to dual enrollment, like we hang our hat on us providing this extended learning experience for our students, and have done so for years. We are significantly concerned about, in July, the potential of having to tell parents that we have to find some other option that we know so many families rely on.
So those are the buckets.
Yes.
And you mentioned earlier that there's prioritization that has to be happening now as you figure out how you're going to cope with all this. So where do you even start?
Anything directly affecting human capital will probably be on the top of the list. I'm talking about direct impact on students in addition to human personnel, the human resource. However, I'm going to call it a soft prioritization, and I say that because I'm hopeful. Right now, it is a freeze. They've not been reallocated. So if there's going to be any kind of cuts in these spaces, I think we are owed the gift of time to think through. This gives us no time to think through alternative plans. July 1 was our start date for implementing these funds. And we know there's some things we have to get off the ground. So we'll start with things off the ground and kind of take it, I hate to say month by month, but we got to kind of take it 1 month, 1 day at a time and look forward to an answer. I just don't foresee a freeze of $6.8 billion turning into a withdrawal of $6.8 billion. We're going to land somewhere, and we just look forward to whatever that landing space is going to be, and we'll figure things out.
Superintendent Dan Sims, thank you very much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you as well. It's been a pleasure.
You just heard GPB's Grant Blankenship with Bibb County Schools Superintendent Dan Sims on the likely effects of frozen federal education funding. The Georgia Council for the Arts today announced more than $1.3 million in competitive grant funding to recipients in 49 counties. The initial disbursements for fiscal year 2026 will support more than 100 arts organizations. They include the second annual Statesboro Arts Festival in Southeast Georgia and an after-school arts program in Northwest Georgia's Catoosa County. The money comes from appropriations made by the Georgia General Assembly and the congressionally funded National Endowment for the Arts. A U.S. Postal Service distribution center continues to struggle with operations more than a year after its opening caused frustrating delays in mail delivery across the state. GPB's Sophie Grudas has more.
The assessment released last week comes from the Office of Inspector General and is based on observations at the postal facility in Palmetto, south of Atlanta. It finds improved service performance, but it still remains below national averages and well below agency goals. The audit questions about $16 million in spending. It also shows about one in five employees aren't showing up to work on any given day. The facility's managers disagree with many of the report's key findings and recommendations. The Palmetto Mail Distribution Center and others nationwide have come under intense scrutiny in recent years. The head of the beleaguered U.S. Postal Service resigned in March. For GPB News, I'm Sophie Gratis.
An Atlanta attorney is among those who died in the massive floods that laid waste to Texas Hill Country. The Huff Powell Brady Law Firm said on its website on Friday that attorney Josephine Hardin was in Texas with her family and died in the early hours of July 4th. Born in 1997, she was remembered as a beloved colleague and natural leader who gave back to the community through several organizations. A week-long search for more victims along the Guadalupe River was temporarily paused yesterday because of more heavy rains. A jury in Metro Atlanta's DeKalb County has awarded a $40 million verdict to a young woman in a first-of-its-kind trial against a hotel owner accused of turning a blind eye to sex trafficking. An attorney for the unnamed woman says the verdict on Friday against United Inn and Suites in Decatur serves as a warning to hotels concerned more about profits than the safety of children. The attorney, Pat McDonough, argued his client was sold hundreds of times over a 38-day period. The hotel owner argued in court that he didn't know trafficking was taking place. Other similar trials in Georgia had been settled before they went to a jury. Mid-July marks planting season for some produce like tomatoes and okra that could spruce up a plain suburban backyard. GPB's Chase McGee reports on edible landscaping.
If you're looking to reduce your grocery bill, you might be surprised to learn what produce you can grow in the suburbs. Heather Kirk-Ballard is the Sustainable Urban Landscapes Extension Specialist at the University of Georgia. She's a proponent of edible landscaping, the practice of working food-producing plants into ornamental gardening.
Corn, tomatoes, okra, cucumbers, certain summer squashes that you can grow, broccoli, cabbage, all of our greens such as kales and mustard greens, and some of those have a lot of color in them, like Swiss chard.
Kirk-Ballard says that after you check any local landscaping rules, talk to your local extension specialist about what will grow in your area and when to plant it. For GPB News, I'm Chase McGee.
Augusta-based golf cart manufacturer Club Car says one of its European subsidiaries has delivered two custom-made electric vehicles to Pope Leo. The company said last week the car was made in Poland and is designed to be transported on long-haul flights to help the Pope on international visits. Club Car acquired Polish luxury golf and leisure car company Garia in 2022. the Garia vehicle was delivered to Pope Leo at his summer residence, Castel Gandolfo, in Rome. Turning now to Georgia sports, the Atlanta Braves selected shortstop and outfielder Tate Southastein as its first-round draft pick yesterday in the MLB draft. Ronit Shaw is vice president of amateur scouting for the Braves. He says Southastein has a lot of potential.
He's got the tools to play just about anywhere on the field because he's got an above-average arm. He's a plus runner. And just the athleticism and the looseness, the twitch that you need to play, whether it's shortstop, second, or center, but we're definitely going to send him out of shortstop.
Daniel Pierce of Mill Creek High School in Northeast Georgia's Jackson County was selected by the Tampa Bay Rays in the 14th round. And the New York Yankees selected Dax Kilby, a shortstop from Metro Atlanta's Coweta County, in the 39th round. GPB's Peter Biello is at the Braves' Truist Park today and tomorrow to cover the All-Star Game, and we look forward to bringing you those reports on coming editions of Georgia Today. And that's it for today's edition of Georgia Today. If you'd like to learn more about these stories, visit gpb.org/news. If you haven't yet hit subscribe on this podcast, take a moment right now and keep us current in your podcast feed. Hit subscribe, hit like, hit all the things you need to hit. If you have feedback, send us feedback to georgiatoday@gpb.org. I'm Orlando Montoya. We'll be back again tomorrow with another edition of Georgia Today.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.